On today's menu, we're looking at multiple hardware platforms and SUSE Linux Enterprise, and we're going to talk a little bit to the guys who do the development steps to get SUSE Linux Enterprise to run on multiple different types of hardware platforms, as well as talk to the guys from Partner Engineering who help various partners certify their platforms with SUSE Linux Enterprise. All coming up right now on Novell Open Audio. Welcome to Novell Open Audio, the podcast that connects the Novell user community with what's going on inside and around the Novell universe. I'm your host, Ted Hager, and there is no Aaron Quill today. Instead, we got a couple other gentlemen sitting in the studio with us who we'll introduce in just a moment. A couple quick reminders before we get on with it. First one is that our first listener survey, our mid-year semi-anniversary survey for listeners, is now online and available. It'll be linked from the show notes on this episode, and we're looking to get feedback from our listener community about how we're doing with the show, what kind of things we can change, and how you're using Novell Open Audio. In a few minutes, we'll get to an interview with two engineers out of the Nuremberg offices for Novell, two SUSE engineers who work with multiple hardware platforms, and they're going to tell us a little bit about their work on that. But before we get to that, we've got a couple guys from the Partner Engineering organization with us, and we've got Mike Johnson, who's a senior manager in partner support, and we've also got Chris Cooper, who's director of partner engineering. Guys, welcome to the studio.
Thanks, Tim.
Good to be here, Ted.
Mike, maybe you can tell us a little bit about your background, the kind of stuff you're doing these days, and we'll talk about your org as well.
Okay. I started Novell about 14 years ago. I've been involved in one form or another working with partners that entire time. The experience that I bring to the table is we currently work with all of the key hardware and software vendors that Novell works with to make sure their products are compatible with ours, so we have our product ready to hit the streets running on everybody else's.
14 years. Now, if I put back a timeline on that, that means you've already dealt with multiple operating system platforms throughout this whole time. You've dealt with various flavors of NetWare, going all the way back into...
I broke in with the NetWare 2.2, then the NetWare 3, 4, 5, 6, and so on.
So you did OSGen and those kind of things.
Yes.
Okay, and you brought it forward. You did Unix once long ago as well with UnixWare.
Yes, UnixWare, AppWare, all of those.
Today you're dealing with a lot of Linux.
Yes. As a matter of fact, our primary focus today is on Linux. The SUSE Linux product brings a lot of benefits to the table. We're able to leverage the experience we have with NetWare and the experience that the SUSE engineers have with Linux and merge those together to come up with a better enterprise product than we've ever had before.
Great. We're going to have a lot of questions for you then. Chris, welcome to the studio. You and I actually used to work in the same organization in the past. Tell us your history
for
our listeners.
Ted, we've been to India. We've been to some interesting places together. I actually started with Novell about 15 years ago. I spent the first several years of my career with Novell carrying a bag, as they say, out in the New England area. But for about the last 10 or 11 years, I've worked pretty much exclusively in the partnering arena as an account manager with specific companies that Novell has had partnerships with over the years. And I've spent the last 3.5 or 4 years in the partner engineering organization, where we are all about enabling our hardware and software vendors to integrate with, interoperate with Novell's different platforms, whether it's an operating system or whether it's a resource management or identity management platform and so forth.
So give us an idea. With SUSE Linux Enterprise, what does the partner engineering organization do? What's kind of the process that you guys go through?
First of all, we have a partnering program that is called PartnerNet, and we invite partners of all types to participate in this Novell ecosystem. And with SUSE Linux in particular, we have programs that allow hardware vendors such as IBM and Dell and HP and Fujitsu Siemens Corporation, etc., to work with us on an engineer-to-engineer basis, where we allow them to test and certify different hardware systems as well as multiple hardware architectures with the SUSE Linux code. And that includes feature enhancements, taking advantage of new capabilities that these different hardware vendors introduce as they come out with new lines, and helping them troubleshoot as they go through the process of certification. So certification is really sort of the result. It's sort of the end game of what we do. But the process leading up to that certification includes a lot of testing and certification and troubleshooting and bug fixing. And so in partner engineering, that's what we do. We have people who work with these different vendors in getting to a point where a customer can feel very comfortable in deploying that system inside of their offices. Both the hardware and the software are going to run as advertised.
So when it's mission critical type thing and people want to know, when I'm buying this hardware, I can get support for this software platform, for this operating system. That's what you guys do with the certification process.
Exactly.
Hit me with some numbers. How many systems are certified on SUSE Linux Enterprise?
Well, you know, I'm glad that you asked, because we're excited about what we've been able to accomplish in a very short period of time with Code 10 in particular. So, for example, when we went general availability with that product, we had over 260 certified systems available that day.
That was July 17th of 2016.
July 17th, we had 268 available systems. Now here we are, what, a few weeks later, and we have, just to give you an example, IBM has 262 systems, which are certified with Code 10. Dell has 85. HP has 143. Fujitsu Siemens Corporation has over 30. So, and those are workstations, those are servers. So we're off and running with Code 10. In terms of what is available for SUSE Linux in general, meaning /9 and NLD, that number is, I think, around what, Mike?
It's about 2,700. If you look at the total certifications of both the servers and the workstations, obviously, you know, we have a higher number of products certified with /9 because it's been around longer. But I think one key that needs to be brought out is that the rate of adoption is much, much faster, much, much higher with Code 10 than we've ever seen before with any version of SLES or NetWare in the past.
In that case, then, I guess what we can expect from the record you're already showing, on July 17th, we had a lot of certifications. Here it is September 5th when we're doing this recording, and we're already quite ways beyond that. People should expect over the life cycle of this SUSE Linux Enterprise 10, this is going to keep growing.
Yes.
At what point in the development cycle did the partners start jumping on board? I mean, what point, like during SUSE Linux Enterprise 11, looking to the future, would partners be able to start getting involved, and how would they do that?
Actually, what we've been able to do with SLES 10, Code 10, and also that we're already starting with SLES 11, is we're working with partners today. So the goal is that we work with them very, very early in the development cycle for both the mainline code as well as our own distribution, to make sure that the features that they need to enable new hardware are available and fully supported. As we work with those partners, it's in lockstep through the entire process. There's testing going on the entire time, both in our own QA department as well as extending the reach of that QA by having our partners testing in their own labs while we're developing products. So they're seeing alpha product, beta product, and then the release candidates, and then final code. So it's a very tight level of integration where any problems that are run into are caught early when they're cheap and easy to fix. And in addition, it provides a much more reliable, stable product at the end game.
Now, the names that Chris mentioned a moment ago, Mike, he mentioned Dell, mentioned IBM, mentioned HP, Fujitsu Siemens. I re-mention them here because I want to get in on the payment that they're giving Chris, obviously, for dropping names. Is it just the big guys? Is it just the really large hardware vendors that are in the process? Are there other types of vendors? Is it just OEMs? Give me a little idea of what the whole terrain is.
Well, I think those are the key partners that we talk about all the time because they're the big systems vendors. In addition to that, we have a lot of smaller system vendors that we're working with, and very importantly, we also work with several component vendors. So we're working with the Adaptex and the LSIs and the Broadcoms, as well as the video companies like ATI and NVIDIA, so we can make sure that those components actually work before they go into the systems that they're ultimately going to be comprised of. By doing that, it allows us, again, to catch a lot of these problems early, make sure the compatibility is there, and then ultimately makes the process easier for not just the big partners, but the little partners, as well as white box vendors down the road.
And when you do these certifications, this gives the customer, it should give the customer a certain level of, I guess, assurance about the supportability of the platform that they're using, especially for different types of configurations that they're going to be relying on, high reliability, I guess. the question on it is, we know that there are other vendors out there that certify hardware. Red Hat, of course, is the standout among them because Red Hat's such a prominent name in the Linux business. Novell's been doing certifications for a long time. Can you give me a little bit of an idea of how the certifications might differentiate between Red Hat versus Novell?
Yes. Novell has been involved in the certification business with the YES certification program and even some before that for going on 15 years. Certification is very important, and really the focus of that was to expand the reach from a handful of products that work to working on as many products as possible out in the industry. Novell certification has been seen for years as one of the leading certifications because of the stringent nature of the tests. What we're able to do is we actually focus on a lot of different areas of interoperability. So it's not just, does the system boot, does it work? We dig in fairly deeply. We're looking at how is the memory handled, how is the utilization of the CPU handled. Some key differentiators, for example, that we focus on with our network background that maybe some of our competitors don't focus as heavily on is we really focus on the networking functionality. So, you know, with a server, you're really looking, first of all, at disk storage and network interoperability. That's where the focus of our testing really shines because we're able to take the background that we have both with SUSE and NetWare to make sure that testing is very, very good.
So this is brought forward not just Linux experience, or we're not inventing something here. We're actually taking past experience, moving it into the Linux space.
Yes. Yeah. What we're doing is we're taking the experience that we learned on a previous OS, applying it to this new OS, and taking the best of breed tests from both of those environments, so we end up with a better set of tests than we've ever had.
So then are there different like levels that people engage your organization with, Chris? Do the different types of partners have different ways to engage with you? Dell, for example, may want to get really intense with us, whereas a small vendor may not want to get quite as in-depth with us.
These are partnerships that go well beyond integrating our products together and making sure that we have that we're compatible technologically. The relationships are deeper and more significant than that. So to give you an idea, every quarter we spend time, multiple days, with each one of these partners, one by one, and share our roadmaps with one another. We obviously need to, and I know that you have spoken with or are going to speak with Eno and with Bodo in our SUSE engineering organization. Our engineers spend a lot of time with engineers at these hardware vendors to understand where they're going, where they're taking their hardware architectures. And we, in turn, are sharing with them what our software roadmap looks like. And you can imagine how we might be able to leverage one another's roadmap and direction. And so we have these very high-level relationships with some of these companies. Now, obviously, there are smaller companies who have a different focus and a different go-to-market strategy. And so we have partner programs that allow them to have an appropriate level of contact and relationship with Novell. Mike mentioned that we work with smaller, what we call white box vendors. So Intel, for example, has an extensive channel that is very, very important in some of the emerging markets that Novell is interested in China, in India, in other parts of the world where there are a substantial number of systems vendors and white box vendors who play an important role in that market. So the relationships are going to vary based upon the size of the organization, whether they're a hardware vendor, whether they're a software vendor, and so forth.
Yeah, we actually had an interview not too long ago that we played where it was the first time we ever had to do a bleep on Novell Open Audio. And it wasn't because somebody used profanity, but it was because they had mentioned how they had this access to this machine. They had pointed to a laptop and said, oh, we had that about 12 months before anybody else had even seen that machine. And I actually said what the machine was, and we had to bleep that part out in the show. First time we've ever had to do a bleep on the show. So we've seen some of this kind of access, even here on Novell Open Audio. A lot of our listeners have an interest in desktop systems specifically. And you'd mentioned that we had some workstation certifications out there as well. This is kind of new territory for Linux. For the longest time, it's been thought of as a great server operating system. In fact, Linux plus Apache is kind of like the gold standard for web servers these days. But a lot of people don't realize that Novell's driving certifications for desktop. What kind of certification levels are we at with desktop Linux at this point?
Well, it's clearly a reaction to an emerging market requirement. We're seeing more and more of these hardware vendors interested in certifying desktops, workstations for Linux, which I think indicates that there's a greater interest, even at an enterprise level, in utilizing Linux at the desktop. And so we've got, right now we have over 30 workstations.
30 systems. Who are doing it? Which vendors are doing this?
IBM, Dell, and HP.
They are actually certifying systems, because we know that IBM or Lenovo now has actually offered certain systems with SUSE Linux Enterprise Desktop preloaded on them. But so HP and Dell have both certified systems as well for running with it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, it's kind of a turnaround for HP, who had at one point decided not to certify desktops with Linux. And after we met with them and talked to them extensively about what the certification would bring to the table, they decided to certify their entire desktop line with SUSE Linux Enterprise Desktop.
Well, that brings us to one last thing I want to find out from you guys before we get the engineers from Nuremberg to speak about what they do on the engineering side, and that is, how does somebody find out about the different hardware and software vendors that are certified on SUSE Linux Enterprise?
Well, probably the best way would be to go out to the Novell Partner Product Guide. That's where we actually start and list all of the products that have actually been certified or declared as ready, meaning compatible with Novell's SUSE Linux as well as our other products. You just go to the website, you enter the search terms that you want, and it'll return both the certified and ready products and show you everything that you need to know.
We'll link to that from the show notes. Chris, since you mentioned it, we've got the interview with Bodo Bauer and also Eno Krumreich, who spoke to us. Eno's awesome, by the way. He cracks me up because on the bottom of every one of his emails it says, "Do not trust a computer you can lift." Because he deals with the big iron stuff, so never trust a computer you can lift. But we're going to find out from these guys a little bit more about what goes into the actual engineering process and how they special purpose the platform so that it works with the different hardware features on the different platforms out there. Oh, I'll mention one thing about this interview as we go into it here, and that is that this is one of our interviews from our Nuremberg series that Aaron Quill and I did. So you'll hear Aaron Quill's voice also in this interview. And this is one of these audio quality issue interviews. We're still putting the issue on here. We want to get the content out there, and we didn't want to fly back to Germany at the moment. So here it comes. We're talking today about hardware platforms, and this is with Bodo Bauer, who is a technical project manager for SUSE Linux Enterprise, and another technical project manager for SUSE Linux Enterprise, Eno Krumreich. I want you guys to introduce yourselves as well, if you would. Give us a little description, maybe, of what you actually do. Let's start with Bodo here. Bodo, welcome.
Hi, this is Bodo, and you didn't pronounce my name too badly, so it was okay.
Yours is an easy one.
I can live with that. As I said, I'm in the technical project management team, the team which is responsible for the enterprise products, basically, the SUSE Linux Enterprise. I focus on i386 and x86 64 platforms. And I also deal with AMD when it comes to anything technical. So our AMD relationship on a technical base, that's one of my main responsibilities as well.
And now, Eno, how badly did I do on your last name?
Oh, not too bad. My name is Eno Krumreich. I'm also a technical project manager in the team. And I'm responsible for a mainframe and storage, also storage for all platforms and mainframe, Linux on mainframe.
Now, when you say platforms, what do you mean by platform?
The name platform is sometimes really misused, but in the term how we use it means that we differ between i386, x68, 64, Power, Itanium, and the 390 architecture.
So you're really talking about the processor then, that SUSE is actually running on.
Yes.
Yeah, we had in the beginning we had big confusions talking to classic Novell, because their platform often means that it runs on Linux, on Windows, on NetWare or something, and so communication was rather difficult sometimes because the terms weren't clear. And so when we had SUSE talk about platforms, it says, you know, said we're talking different hardware architectures.
Yeah, classic NetWare administrators would look at it and say, NetWare's their platform, and Windows, bah. So we're talking hardware here.
Yeah, because for us, the software platform there isn't any choice. It's Linux all the way.
Now, one of the things that happens when we talk about SUSE Linux in public all the time, we're constantly talking about the common code base as enabled by AutoBuild. And that common code base, it's seen as a real advantage here. What does the common code base do across multiple platforms? And is it really a completely common code base when you, say, look at an S390 versus an Intel 32-bit platform?
Up to, let's say, 98%, yes, it is a common code platform. That means if we look at the kernel, we have one kernel source, which is just have, of course, architecture-specific configurations because on the mainframe we do not have a PCI bus. So the whole PCI bus drivers are not enabled in the kernel. It does not make any sense. But the rest of the code is the same. And, of course, if I look at the mainframe, we have some mainframe-specific utilities to work with the devices. But this is only a very small package. The absolute majority of packages is really the same. And what we really look at also at the packages, at the package level, is that we have no conditional compiling. That means that there is only code which is compiled for mainframe, for power, or for Itanium, but that we try to have only one code without conditional compile.
Actually, this is great that I have an opportunity to ask this question, because I've always wondered, how do you handle memory on different architectures? Because I'd imagine memory is radically different on a 390 versus an x86 box. Or do we treat memory exactly the same regardless of the actual architecture?
There are two parts. You have a common code base in the kernel that's treating the memory, and you have an architecture-specific part of the memory handling. Because even when you look at the hardware do not have the same possibilities on every platform.
Right.
So we have to recognize this and to take this in advantage on the implementation.
What about the vendor-specific hardware management things that often go into an operating system? Like there's often monitoring tools and those kind of things. Are those actually going to be different? Do the vendors actually help provide those kind of packages? Is there anything that we take into account in that area?
Well, we try to standardize on those things as much as possible as well. Of course, there are vendor-specific extensions to their hardware. So Dell has a different reporting scheme than HP does, than IBM does, for example. But still, there's some IPMI, for example, which is a standard on top of that, which may be just a subset of all the vendor-specific extensions they have. But for the most part, we try to stay with the standard and get the vendors to support the standard, which in very many cases is successful.
What platforms do we actually support with SUSE? Is there an official list of supported platforms?
Yes, the SLES is running on E386, X68-64, Itanium, mainframe, and PowerPC. PowerPC on PowerPC 4, 5, and the next generation, of course, will be also supported.
And if you look at the list, there's something standing out, because all of the platforms are 64-bit platforms, but I386 is the only remaining 32-bit platform we have. So if you look at what people think is the most common platform, it seems to be 32-bit, when in reality it's just a small subset of what we support. So our platforms are mostly 64, and the 32-bit platform is pretty quickly fading away in the server space, at least. So you still have laptops which are 32-bit, but if you try to buy a 32-bit server, you're going to have a hard time these days.
And because SUSE Linux has been known as something that's supported across multiple architectures or multiple platforms out there on the hardware side, I think there's going to be some expectation from what we said, because we said SUSE Linux Enterprise Server does these different platforms, this diverse array. Is it the same rich number of platforms for Enterprise Desktop, or is it a smaller? I would expect it to be a smaller number of platforms.
Yes, it is. The problem is, if you look at the mainframe, we have no graphics adapter. So SLAT does not make any sense on it. And so the SLAT is only supported on I386 and X68-64, and that's it.
That's it, okay.
We have PowerPC, the OpenSUSE runs on PowerPC as well, but just to get the hop from the desktop. So there's another platform where we have a desktop on. It's not the enterprise desktop, but it's OpenSUSE.
Okay. Are there unofficial platforms that are supported? Are there any of them that are out there that people are like working on in as community projects that really SUSE isn't generating them necessarily, but they are out there that people can mess around with?
In the past, we had running Spark, we had running AXP, and also ARM. But this is currently not really supported anymore.
We don't like to talk about that as much, then, is it?
They run together in, within the auto build, so if someone has something to time to do on it, they are still built.
Yeah, there are a few enthusiasts here in development which still care very much about their particular babies, which is, as you know, said, Spark, or I think they had a 68K pod as well.
Yes.
And ARM, of course, which now Surface is again kind of in the MicroSUSE project, which is an OpenSUSE fork, which is led by Ulrich Hechtier out of research and development as well. And that runs on a bigger scale of platforms as well, as our official products do.
When you say ARM, you're talking like the strong ARM processor that's in a bunch of handhelds and now starting to show up in the cell phones, like Palm Trios and such.
Yes.
Exactly.
With supporting all these different platforms, do we ever come across something that doesn't work on one of those platforms?
Yes, we do. There are different aspects to this. There are applications which run on certain platforms and don't at all on other platforms, and oftentimes it wouldn't make sense to port those. You don't need certain stuff on the mainframe as you do on a desktop system. So those we just accept, we don't care much. But there are others where customers migrate from one platform to the other, and so then they discover, wow, this used to work, but it doesn't anymore. And those are things we care about very much, and we have an architecture team which usually then ends up taking care of those issues and fixing what we treat then as bugs, so it runs across all platforms again.
Okay.
Because this is something we are fairly committed to, that all of the base services are the same on all our platforms. So we want to have really a common code base across all platforms wherever possible.
Now, I would expect that that gets you into a situation, though, as well, because you're talking about things not working on platforms, where it starts to become a question of, is it, say, IBM's fault that this doesn't work on this hardware architecture? Is it Novell's fault that it doesn't work there? How does that kind of thing get resolved? What's the path of escalation? How does that kind of thing work?
I would extend this to a sort of more common code base issue. You see, the thing is that the different architectures behave different, very different. That means, for example, a PowerPC architecture is what I would call it more sensitive to certain bugs. This means if you think of the kernel and you have the different lock problems in the kernel that you have to protect data structures, a PowerPC is much more sensitive to locks which are not set correctly, and a 392. The same bugs also happen on the Intel architecture or the AMD 64, but not that often or not that easy reproducible as it is on a PowerPC or on a 390.
Does that mean like it doesn't like cause a kernel panic or some kind of mass catastrophe as much? Like it's a little more resilient?
Or simply stuck the kernel, or it doesn't any more I.O. or something like this.
Okay.
And this is one advantage we have, having these different platforms, that the code quality is much more improved because we test on multiple platforms. And even Intel gets a lot of improvement in the code, because the same problem will also hit an Intel machine, but let's say two times a year. But with a Power machine, we can reproduce it, let's say, within hours, because it's simply, it's an architecture thing that it is more sensitive to those things.
Yeah, we have the whole span. If you look, there's 32-bit, there's 64-bit, there's big Endian, there's little Endian machines. So if code is stable among all those iterations, it increases quality very much.
And then, of course, if there are really bugs, then we have to dig down where the bug is, because the drivers, we receive a lot from our partnerships, like from IBM, also from Dell, or also from HP, if you think of Itanium. And so what we then have to do is, okay, to look at it and to find out whether it's in the code that was being provided by the partner or not. This is sometimes it happens that we bring it back to the partner who is actually our work and vice versa. So I think we have a really good partnership to our partners that this is no problem to solve those bugs.
Now, one of the things also that I know about classic SUSE, well before Novell and SUSE came together, SUSE was on multiple platforms and was very much ahead of the curve from most software vendors, most platform vendors, as far as embracing 64-bit, embracing multiple platforms. But a lot of times your application vendor may not actually have ported an application to a 64-bit platform. They may still be working on older versions. How do you handle when a customer wants to get the advantages of the 64-bit platform, but they're running an application that their vendor hasn't updated yet? How do you handle that kind of thing? Can a, say, 32-bit app run on a 64-bit platform?
Okay, this is, I think, not a big problem to support these legacy applications. What we do is we have a so-called compatibility mode. That means that on a 64-bit operating system, like on the AMD 6864 processor, we can execute 32-bit applications. And at least we say, and this is also some sort of support statement, that if an application is not running or is running in a 32-bit mode without any problems and not running in the compatibility mode, this is usually, we treat this as a bug and try to fix it. The same is true on the mainframe. We have there a 64-bit kernel and a 64-bit user land, but can also execute 31-bit applications, which we had in the SLES 9, we had a 31-bit operating system, which we do not have anymore with SLES 10. And on PowerPC, we have a 64-bit kernel running with a 32-bit user land, but we have also support 64-bit applications. You see, for some applications, it's very useful to have these 64-bit address space. If you think of databases, for example, which is the main example for the big address space.
So you said something there that I just want to clarify, because I've always known the 390, when we run SLES on it on the Z series, as being 31-bit. Did you just say that it's now 64-bit under
yes.
SLES 10?
Yes.
Excellent.
It's only 64-bit.
Oh, very cool.
No, but it supports still 31-bit software on the 64-bit operating system.
Oh, great. Well, hey, guys, I want to thank you a lot for coming and sitting down with us. Well, I guess, actually, we're the ones who came to you this time. And sitting down with us and taking the time to explain this to us.
You're welcome.
Welcome. Thanks for having us here and giving us the chance to tell people what we do.
That wraps up our look at the multiple platform support for SUSE Linux Enterprise 10 with all the different hardware platform information that you've gotten from the engineers in Germany as well as the guys from the partner engineering organization here at Novell. I want to remind our listeners to go to www.novell.com/open audio and take our survey for the listener survey. This is our way of finding out how we're doing with the show, whether some of the changes that we've been doing lately are working out for our listening audience. So please make sure you do that. And remember, we are giving away a couple limited edition Novell green backpacks. These are the ones that were only given out to employees who went to President's Club. These are some of our top salespeople from Novell. So if you want to look like a top salesperson or you just want to have a cool green backpack, fill out the listener survey and we're going to do a random drawing after September 30th of two winners. So we'll be announcing that on a show probably the first week of October. Remember that Novell Open Audio is brought to you by Novell Users International in conjunction with Novell Incorporated. All of our content is directed by the input that we receive from our listening audience. You can go to novell.com/open audio and rate any show that we have online. You can also leave comments for us there. Currently, you can take a survey, and you can also make suggestions for shows that you would like us to put on the air, topics or people you would like to have on. And you can also submit questions for upcoming topics that we have coming into Novell Open Audio. That's pretty much a wrap for this time, so we'll see you next time.